I'm Floyd Hall, and this is a Wonder Root Artist feature. I have the pleasure today of speaking with artist Sharon Loudon. Sharon, how are you?
I'm good. Thank you so much for having me, Floyd. This is awesome to be here.
I'm so very happy to have you in today. You're very busy right now.
I am very busy.
You're on a book tour right now promoting your book, Living and Sustaining a Creative Life, which I believe has been a platform for a lot of healthy dialogue among the artist community. Talk a little bit about what inspired you to write the book or collect the essays that are in the book, and what's been, I would even guess, some of the resulting dialogues that have really stuck in your mind since you've written the book.
So, well, first of all, I would say that I wrote the preface of the book, and the 40 artists that are included in this book, they wrote the book. And so they shared their stories, and some are opaque and some are more opaque and some are more transparent. But they're basically essays that are rather short, that they range from anywhere from two paragraphs to, I think, like 6 or 7 pages long, single spaced on the page. But they basically are sharing how they sustain a creative life. And why I did this book? Well, 2.5 years ago, Intellect Books and University of Chicago Press. Intellect Books is the publisher of this book and works together with the University of Chicago Press to they're the ones who came to me and they said, we want you to write a book. And I said, you know, I'm not an expert on anything. I'm just an artist. I'm not somebody who can give advice to anybody unless they ask me. I feel very passionate about that. I don't want to offer solicit advice. So they said, what else would you want to do? What bothers you? What do you have passion for? When I got out of graduate school, I was hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt. My parents did not pay for my education. And so when I got out of graduate school, I needed and wanted a community of artists to lean on, to grow from, to get some assistance, if you will, just even guidance as to what people did to make a living. Those kind of things weren't shared, and they're still not being shared, not enough. Artists, I think, don't give to one another as much, nor do they talk about money. So I thought, why don't I ask 40 people that I know well enough that I can trust that they can reveal their stories and open up this dialogue? To answer the second part of your question about the dialogues that have come from this book, oh my God, the book tour is fantastic because in each book event, whether it be just a conversation, a formal panel discussion, roundtable discussions, it takes all different forms, these events. There's been an incredible amount of discussion and dialogue about a couple of things. I'll just say what they are. Questioning what is the success? What does success mean for an artist today? What does that mean? Also, examination of the identity of an artist. To me, an artist is a working individual that contributes to the economy, and there's nothing romantic about being an artist. I'll just say that because, and it's clear in this book, we're working people that contribute to society. And I that to me is no surprise, but I think to a lot of people in this country, it really is. And I think that those conversations about those two issues, and then also the obvious of keys in which artists, how they do make a living, how do they juggle their life, how they have time management. That all has been talked about in each of these events, and it's just been a thrill to be able to meet so many different people and have that exchange. And I also think that's really, really important. Some of these essays that are more opaque, they start a conversation, and some that are more transparent complete that thought. And there's a great range in this book. I'll also say, too, that I'm sorry I'm going on. I just want to say one more thing, is that the book has 40 artists, as I said, ages 30 to 66, 19 people from New York, because that's where I've been for the past 23 years. That's my community. 19 people from the rest of the country, different parts of the country, and then 2 people from Europe. And ages, I said, 30 to 66, 21 women and 19 men.
It sounds like this conversation or the topics addressed via conversation, via the actual essays in the book, It sounds like, I'll just say this overall dialogue, is something that could have taken place 50 years ago, 100 years ago, 200 years ago, as it relates to the artist's place in society and how artists have always approached their craft and how to make a living. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Well, there have been, like Vasari had a book about artists' lives. I mean, there have been books out there that, and I think there is another book also, and I don't have the name of it right in front of me, that has talked about artists' lives or people who are creative and how they function in society. I think it's a fascination with a lot of people. But I think that it always deserves a reexamination and looking at again, because I think the creative mind contributes so much to entrepreneurialism, to anybody who's self-employed, to be able to show how one applies their creativity, in this case, in the visual artist's life, in their work, to how they manage their life in society. And I think those tools inherent within them, whether it be risk-taking, going with the flow, having a sense of a time that's organic rather than extremely rigidly structured, although determined by the creator, their own structure, so it could be rigid to them, being applied to functioning well in society to be able to make a living. I think those kind of tools that an artist has are extremely valuable and ones to be shared.
When it comes to living and sustaining a creative life, do you think that artists do a great job of asking for help?
That's a great question. I certainly didn't, and I should have a long time ago. I think artists, because we as creators, we're in our studios or in our creative practice. Our creative practices are usually very, very personal. We're, at least for me as an artist, my work is my truth. It's the closest thing to what I believe is truly who I am or what I feel. And that intangibility that's within me and all of my vulnerabilities that are out in the world. And so when you have that, you perhaps want to protect that. I think that it can be very difficult for someone to trust another individual, especially someone who's vulnerable with their work and insecure. I think we all have insecurities. I mean, certainly being human, we do. But especially, I think, artists who have their work and unsure about how they want to get it out into the world. Yeah, I can see that is an issue. But this book is about helping those people without any advice. In this book, there's absolutely no advice. I didn't want anybody in the book to be able to say, you should do this, you should do that, because every artist's life is different. What I'm hoping for is that people will read these essays and say, hey, I can do that. Oh, wow, this person did this. Oh, wow. This person, oh, and the other thing we've been talking about is perception and the difference between perception and reality. There's a few people in this book who are, quote, famous, perceived as such, but they're working just as hard as the other artists who are not, quote, known. And so that's the other surprising thing in the book tour that we've been talking about, and it's been very interesting. If someone has a price tag that's very high to somebody's work, does that mean they're any more successful than somebody who doesn't? I say no, because you don't know, actually, has that artist been consistently selling at that price range? If it's a high price range, let's say, I don't know, $50,000. I'm just throwing a number out there. We also don't know if the price of the work was the actual price of the work. Did a work sell for that exactly? What happens behind closed doors with the discounts that are given, or just some kind of deal? Maybe it goes to a museum at an amazing discount. Maybe it's donated. Maybe it's given. And so then, therefore, Maybe it wasn't even paid for, but it was valued as such. We really don't know. So I think what's interesting about this book, about the giving part, back to your original question, is that I'm hoping that these essays will give to artists and say, hey, there's a sense of comfort. The people who are quote, really successful, whatever that means, perceptually in the market, they're working just as hard as somebody who isn't perceptually.
You talked about this book in terms of it being a reexamination, if you will, of the artist's role in society, or how maybe the artists see themselves in our current society. And I think that where we are right now is in a place where there's lots of change. And that's on a global scale, lots of change among people, among nations, among ideas, all of the above. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering, where is the most prevalent source of frustration for a lot of working artists that you've been able to sort of glean from some of these conversations?
I think it's just a struggle to make a living from your work, I think, fundamentally. I also think that it's expectations. One of the reasons why I did this book is I teach, and I teach graduate students at the New York Academy of Art in New York City. And they come to me in their second year and they say, how do I get a gallery as this sort of silver bullet to make a living? And then the idea still that a gallery sort of takes care of them, which can't be farther from the truth. Galleries are fantastic members of the art world that add to an artist's life as a partner, but not necessarily the whole ball of wax. I think that very, very few artists make a living, consistent living from a dealer. I think that's an old model that's outdated, which I said in my preface. I do think that there's terrific partners. I think the most frustrating thing is not knowing for an artist how, when they get out of school or even in midlife, how do I connect and have a dialogue with the public? How do I have that exposure? How do I, as far as their work, how can I be in the public discourse, in the public realm? How can I sustain a creative life and make a living and make my work? How can I balance the reality of life and making a living with having time to make my work? I think those are all very big, big issues that are frustrating.
I would like to shift ever so slightly to talking about your own art practice. Because I'm very curious about your own process. You've described your own work using this term, anthropomorphic individuals.
Right, that's right. My little gestures.
Right.
Anthropomorphic individuals. Wow, you did your homework. Yes.
What does that mean?
It means that these little squiggly marks, I'm not being self-deprecating, but these gestures, they are these characters for me. And somebody asked me the other day, are they characters like words or are they characters like just abstract form? And I said both in a lot of ways. They're part of a visual vocabulary that I have a dialogue with that I try to put in context, create a certain poetry, if you will. But my work expands all different media. I do painting, drawing, sculpture, animation, sculpture also being installation, public art. I use photography now as a part of my process to draw from too, and to stencil images to put in my paintings. That's been a recent development. So for me, I'm not a painter, sculptor, animator. I'm just an artist who uses the media, different media, to assist me in my vocabulary. I think my work I'm a vehicle for my work. I'm the maker. And so I try to direct it to be able to foster and grow this language. These anthropomorphic individuals are these characters that I are beloved to me. They've been growing and developing since I got out of graduate school. I think probably even way before that within me. I think they're highly autobiographical. And this is the first time in the last couple of years I've been able to admit that to myself. I create environments, massive, big installations, by taking one of these gestures and then multiplying them. It's sort of like I would always have this reoccurring idea of me being in a helicopter. As a child, I was thinking of this, looking down, and there would be all these dots on the ground. And then as I got closer to those dots, of course, they became much more individual, and they became more definable. And so I love that idea of the individual being within the environment. Maybe it's sort of, quote, lost in a way, but I know these as individuals, but then they, all together they form nature. So it's like, or a nature. It's like of nature, but not of nature, because also they appear to perhaps feel like they're, they could be an extension of nature, but they're made with hard materials and they come from the idea of the individual. So gesture. And how is it autobiographical to me? I feel like I hide within these environments that I create for myself. I love these sort of playful, whimsical forms that are supposed to be happy, which is not actually popular, but I don't really care. I'm old enough that I love making these happy, beautiful, hopefully. I love beauty. Yeah, I like to make things that hopefully contribute some beauty and pleasure as well as thought and have hopefully some kind of dialogue with the public in an intangible way.
And I really enjoy the scale of your work. I've seen a few of your installations, and
wow,
from the material choices that you make, whether it be aluminum or whether it be the not string.
It's like rubber. You've done amazing research. Thank you.
Well, I was trying to recall all of the actual material choices, but the sheer scale of your work. Were your pieces always that large, or did you grow into them as your ability to produce them sort of expanded?
That's a great question. And I do appreciate the research. I think as artists, nobody really knows sometimes who's paying attention, you know, because we are just making our work and I just think about my work. I don't think about who's paying attention. So thank you. I'm very flattered. I think it depends on the venue that I have a dialogue with. What's great about working with museums, which I enjoy the most, that I can have this collaboration with museum curators and institutions where they offer spaces, but also a dialogue and an opportunity for growth. And so I grew into that over time through different venues that were offered to me, but also venues that I had worked very hard to be able to work with and get to a certain point to have that collaboration.
Last question. When it comes to your growth as an artist, and maybe even as we incorporate what you've done with this book, when you look back on your career, maybe when you first got out of college, as you mentioned, you were in a different place then, but what would that version of yourself be most proud of about who you are now?
It would be that I have been able to make my work all these years and that I've been able to grow my work and make a living. I mean, to sustain a creative life. Some people, artists, think that success perhaps is that stardom or getting a page in Art Forum, but getting a big gallery or things that are more external. But most of these artists in this book will tell you, and you can hear them on recordings from different book events, that when I ask them what is the measure of success, they say to be able to make my work and the freedom to make it. And I would say if that version of me to be proud of the fact that I can do that and keep being creative. I mean, there's there's a merit to be able to be an artist and be creative. So that's what I would say I could be most proud of.
Sharon Loudon, Living and Sustaining a Creative Life. Let all of our listeners know where they can find the book and keep up with you as you travel along promoting it.
Thank you. Thank you, Floyd, for being here, for allowing me to be here. Thank you, Wonder Root and Burnaway. It's been a pleasure to be here. You can purchase the book on Amazon. You can purchase it directly through the University of Chicago Press. If you just go to University of Chicago Press, put in Google and put the title in. You can also keep you can follow me on Twitter. My handle is at Louden Studio, LoudenStudio. You can also follow us on the book tour by going to my website. There's a book projects page and a calendar. And finally, on Twitter, you can also track different comments and press on the book by hashtag LiveSustain. And that's for every book tour we live tweet using that hashtag. So I would say that that's the best way. And of course, on Facebook, I post a lot of things on Facebook. So we're out there. And you, if you want to email me and ask me questions, just find me through my website. It's info@SharonLouden.com.
Sharon Louden, thank you for your time.
Thank you, Floyd. It's been great to be here. Thank you so much. Thank you.